Hi, and welcome to the Unhinged History Podcast, the podcast where I cannot get it together. Truly.
And the podcast where I asked her to, but she refuses.
Truth. Each week we come together and we verbally assault one another with stories we have compulsively learned and are ramming the opposing story down the other person's throat.
So far, there's been multiple knockout rounds, and Teresa has won every single one of them.
To be fair, I fight dirty.
Minus that time I told her about Alexander the Great. There's that.
That was awful. That was Sorry. Awful. But Sorry. Okay, either way, we're here. We made it to another week. Congratulations.
Celebrate us. I'm Angie. That's Teresa.
Ha. Oh, hey, we should do that. That's the important part. Like, that's the part we should really care about.
I mean, that and our sources, right?
Probably that more. Could you care about that
Yeah,
more?
Like, you could call me whatever you wanted. I care about you more.
Okay, I think, honestly, if somebody walking down the street called me, even if they called me Angie, I would be shocked and appalled and amazed. It would be like seeing a biblical angel land in front of you, you know, just eyes and wings and just being like, freaking A, what the hell am I looking at?
So would you be clutching your pearls while high-fiving them? Because I feel like that would be the...
I would put my head between my knees and throw up first. I feel like that is the only thing to do, because that is the reason they start with do not be afraid, is because somebody has just thrown tummy chunks.
I don't know how loved I'm feeling about you saying you would simply put your head between your knees and hurl if someone called you Angie.
Well, okay.
But
I was talking about seeing an angel, not necessarily being called Angie.
Oh, well, it all makes sense then.
Anyhow, I mean, I'm sober.
Yeah. Thumbs up for me too.
Yeah. Okay. So there's that.
Winning.
Or not. With a question mark. You know, it's like, if we can have that kind of interaction, buckle up.
Yeah, that kind of interaction, sober. Imagine what it's like after we've had a few.
I hope you're prepared, because we've got another hour of this to record. So, ta-da!
dun, 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 dun.
Last week, you went last, which means I go last this time. So I don't know. You kind of reached out and you're like, hey, I got my story done early. And I'm like, oh, let's record.
Yeah, let's do that. I can do
Hell
that.
Yeah.
I'm just sorting it out. Give me just a second. And I realized I literally pushed on to our meeting and didn't have my notes. Because, you know, what fun would that be? So all that to say, this could be off the top of my head. This could have notes and sources. Take your pick. What would you like?
I mean, I'd prefer the notes and sources. I feel like we just had this conversation.
We did. Yeah. And we like sources better than each other. That was the main takeaway.
And I mean, if you've listened a couple of times, the best source is the National Parks website.
Truly. And I'm going to be sad to tell you that today I don't have national parks. Do you?
I don't think so.
I do have the BBC though. So, I mean, like, there's that.
I think I have one national park service in mind.
Are you for real?
I'm 100% for real. I had to double down and look again, but yeah.
Okay, at this point, I have to know, do you, when you're researching a topic, do you just for fun check to see if there's a national park source just so you can say it?
No, I think it just happens. And it's not that I have, like, if you take off my shirt, it's not like I have a tattooed green park service shirt underneath this.
She does, you guys. Don't feel lie to you.
You can never have a farmer's tan if you've got a full short sleeve shirt tattooed on your body.
She has that like I have the Reddit logo. Oh, okay. All right. I'm going to give you my sources. So my first source is the State Library of Victoria. There is another source called the Irish Revolution Project. My favorite source was the Women's Museum of Ireland, the world101.org. I had to have some answers to some questions. So I'm hitting you with all of my sources today because I had a lot of questions, and so I found a lot of sources.
Okay.
The Johns Byrne Library blog, Irish Women Rising, Margaret Skinander, Britannica.com, the National Library of Ireland, and of course the BBC, as I mentioned earlier. And I'm saying this right now, not 100% certain I actually pronounced her name right. Skinander, Margaret Skinander, MARGARETSKINNIDER. I have even listened to her personal interview and honestly
Still no
am
clue.
now realizing I said it right to myself about 100 times while I was typing this out, but now that it's coming out of my mouth, it doesn't sound right. But all that to say, I do have a YouTube link that I can send to you of her actual voice giving her actual take on the events. So I think that's really awesome. So,
And here's where Angie's voice is dubbed over by this foreign woman, and she goes and makes a drink.
bye.
Yeah,
That will not be happening, I promise. I have yet to figure out how to dub over my voice. I will say this, my story does feel a little bit different than any other story I've done lately or so far. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that the events that are in my story didn't really happen that long ago. Even though they feel like they happened like on a different planet 1,000 years ago, it was really just 100 years ago.
wow.
Yeah. So with that said, like I said, I'm going to tell you the story of the life of Margaret Skinander, because we are coming up on St. Paddy's Day here in a couple of days. And as the cult classic film, The Boondock Saints states, everyone is Irish on St. Paddy's Day. To be clear, that is one of my all-time favorite movies. In case anybody is curious about what my favorite movie is, The Boondock Saints is in the top five.
I was about to say, I thought it was The Mummy.
The Mummy is like
In the top one.
number in the top one. Yeah, you can't slag The Mummy, Three Kings, The Boondock Saints, and Indiana Jones.
That's four.
And then, well, there's several Indiana Joneses and several Mummy movies, so do with that what you will.
Okay. Are you all
There you go.
tied?
No.
About to say.
Mummy, The Mummy. And then after that, it's just kind of a rotating, like this could be my favorite movie today, but we could go back to The Boondock Saints being number two tomorrow, you know?
But I mean, like, okay, never mind. Never mind. I'm going to end up editing all
Yeah,
this
are
out
we
because this
done?
is filler. Carry on.
Right, okay. All right. Oh, great. Now I don't know where I'm at. Okay, sorry. Before I do tell you the story, though, I do want to say that I'm fairly new to this topic and I have real big feels about it. And I
Being
think
buried
it's safe to
alive.
say, no, but that is high on my list of ways I don't want to die. Again, I have a list. I think it's safe to say that there are still big feelings about this topic, and they're very real, and for some, probably really raw. So, with that being said, I'm doing my best to understand the events and both sides of the independence of Ireland from Britain, as well as being respectful of hearts and opinions. So, with all that said, here's my story. To be fair, I did start this story out wanting to do Grace O'Malley. Or do you know who Grace O'Malley
Yep,
is?
the pirate.
Yeah. I really, really wanted to do her story, and I was looking into all the things and reading all the notes and just didn't, it didn't sit. It didn't, I wasn't vibing with it as much as I was with Miss Margaret here. So I thought I should go, which is odd because I'm always here for a good pirate queen. But it felt, this one felt, I guess, more imperative to share. Does that make sense?
This
Like,
one hit with
Grace
like,
O'Malley's been
this
told.
one needs to be said. Grace O'Malley, we all know. Like, for me to say it to Teresa, and Teresa would be like, oh yeah, Pirate Queen.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's exactly. Yeah. Okay. So, with all that said, Margaret Skinander was born in Scotland around 1893. Some sources say both of her parents were of Irish descent, but at least one source suggests that her mother may have been Scottish. Regardless, she was born in Scotland in 1893. She did, however, spend her childhood summers in County Monaghan in Ireland. And according to the library blog that I mentioned earlier, it was there that she noticed the disparity between the wealthy Anglo-Irish who held authority in most instances and the poorer Irish living side by side with them. And the need for radical action was very clear to her by the early 1900s. So she's growing up in Scotland, but she is very much experiencing Ireland and what Ireland is going through in this time, right? Like,
Okay.
we've been through famines, we've been through this, we're on the eve of World War One. Like, we're seeing some things, right? So she ends up being educated and working as a mathematics teacher in Glasgow, which I thought was super awesome. But again, she is a woman, and as women are known throughout history, teaching is pretty much your only source of educate of finance for yourself, at least at this time, right? So
Right.
she does that, and she does it well. However, in around 1916, she makes her way back to Ireland via boat. Now, she's been coming and going, but once 1916 hits, she kind of stays. Around this time, she is also in the campaign for women's suffrage and was a member of the Women's Social and Political Union in Scotland. Interesting to note that before she returned to Ireland in 1916, she had joined a rifle practice club in Scotland where women could learn to shoot, quote, like, in defense of the British Empire. That was like the motto of their gun club. Like, we're gonna teach you how to shoot so you can defend our empire. Yay, Britain.
Yikes.
Yeah, right? She would say in her autobiography, quote, I kept on till I was a good marksman. I believed the opportunity would soon come to defend my own country. So.
Yeah, hashtag not the Union Jack.
Right. And I'm thinking by this point, she is very, very aware of things boiling and bubbling under the surface, right? So, right around this time, she meets a woman named Constance Markievicz, whom she would always refer to as the madam, and they became close friends and allies in this need for Irish independence. Now, it is important to mention that Constance, she is of Irish, English, Anglo-Irish descent. She's a countess and a political activist, and was actually the first woman elected to the British Parliament, although she refused to stake her seat because she wasn't going to bow to the king.
Dang.
Right. So she's a pretty impressive activist, very politically minded individual who was very, very involved and very aware of this fight for Irish independence. And her and Margaret, they become very close friends, very close companions and confidants. And every person that I'm going to mention in this story has had such a life, and it's so interesting to me. But anyway, in one of her circumstances, Margaret finds herself in Dublin at Christmas. It's 1915. She's been there, invited there by Madame Constance Markievicz. And on this trip by boat, she did not come empty-handed. She, quote, in my hat, I was carrying to Ireland detonators for bombs, and the wires were wrapped around me under my coat.
Oh.
Yeah, like, she was not joking when she intended to use that marksmanship skill that she had
Yeah.
developed, and
Everything about
she's
that
very
says
serious about
if she was like that in TSA airport lines today,
it.
Oh my, how'd that get there? I must have left my hat when I went to the bathroom and put it back on without knowing.
This isn't even my coat.
Oh.
Oh, heavens.
Oh, it
Yeah.
says my name sewed on the interior. I don't know how this is a setup.
This isn't even my hat. Like I said, not my coat, not my hat. I'm actually on the wrong plane.
Yeah. I'm supposed to be on a
Weird.
ferry. I'm not even supposed to be in an airport.
What is this place? So she says she stayed on the deck because she didn't want to detonate any portions of the bombs on accident. She wanted to stay away from hot water pipes or electrical wire, which she thought might set them off, and makes it into Ireland. At this point, Markovitz asks Skinner to make a plan of something called the Beggar's Bush Barrack. So she finds and surveys a large map of Dublin and then finds her way to the barracks and surveys it from every angle. So remember, this is like Christmas time, 1915, right? Like we're working in that
Yeah.
cold, wintry feeling, right? She then crosses the street to get a better look over the walls of the barracks and discovers a building, which she decides probably holds a powder magazine. It's believed that she, like so many women we've talked about before, uses her gender to sway suspicion away from her. And
Wait,
I
are we gonna
absolutely love
say
this.
that we don't suspect her of nothing because her boobs get in the way?
She has a uterus. Can you believe that? She simply cannot be up to nefarious things.
I mean, to be fair, if we went on a train and that train went 40 miles an hour, our uterus would have flown outside of our bodies, so it wasn't safe.
It's. Well, see? So she's got that going for her, the old uterus and some boobs.
The old
So,
uterus and some boobs.
yep, it'll get you every time. So, she, like I said, she's using her gender to sway kind of the blind eye. And it's said she is even said to have tricked a young boy into helping her create a map of the barracks. She, quote, pretended to lose her handkerchief, and the young boy offered to retrieve it while she stood on tiptoe and assessed that it would be possible to dig a tunnel between two walls and place explosives and a detonator in the hole. So, like, she is using what she's got when she needs it, and I am here for it. These ideas are put to paper and shown to James Connolly, who was a prominent rebel leader, if not the man to go to, right? And this, he agrees, we can, this can work. This is going to happen. Like, we can absolutely use these ideas. We can absolutely use these blueprints that you've given us. And from that day forward, Margaret earns herself the confidence of the Republican leadership. So she is now officially in it, whether she planned to be or not, right? I mean, I'm fairly certain by the time she decided to put those detonators in her hat, she was officially in it. But now she's working in the good graces of the leadership, not just the
Right.
Countess, right? So eventually she makes her way back to Scotland, but then returns to Dublin on Holy Thursday in 1916, having already joined the Citizen Army. And the Women's Museum of Ireland, which honestly was my favorite source for this, gives us a really good understanding of her activities during the Easter Rising. She was involved in taking ammunition from hiding place to hiding place and bringing it to Liberty Hall, and served as a dispatch rider for Michael Manlyn. Now, Manlyn in Connolly is in overall command of the operation during the Rising, and he was based in the General Post Office, but the command of the main forces fell to Mallon, and he is second in command. And then, and excuse me, he is like second in command under Conley, and then under him is Countess Markovitz. So, like, she's doing the thing, she is with the people she wants to be with. And according to the proclamation that was published by the leadership of these rebels, which is the proclamation for a free Ireland, according to that, women are equal to men. And Skinner had no problem reminding Mallon of that when he tried stopping her from throwing a bomb. She argued that women had just as much right to risk their lives as men.
I love her.
Right? 100% for her. So on Easter Rising Day at St. Stephen's Green. At one stage during the fight, she was sent to Lessons Straight Bridge to bring back 16 men to the green. They rendezvous at the College of Surgeons. And at this point, our girl Margaret, an absolute BA woman that she is, changes into an army uniform and observes from her post the British soldiers on the roof of Shelbourne Hotel and becomes the sniper. The New York
Whoa.
Times would call her the teacher turned sniper. And I love that for her.
You know, you gave me every indication we were going that direction, yet when we got there, I was shocked.
Because you just, she did everything. It was like she was the Inspector Gadget arm of this rising, in my opinion. Like, and I'm saying that still, there's still so much for me to learn, but it seems to me that all of these people are multi, I don't know, for lack of a better word, multi-talented. But like, she saw a problem, she solved a problem. She saw a need, she filled the need, whatever that may be. She goes on to say, more than once, I saw the man I aimed at fall. So
Dang.
that marksmanship paid off and she sure defended her country. So, at one point, she was set out with four men under her command to set fire to a building and cut off the retreat of a British force which had planted a machine gun on the flat of the roof of the university church. This is the, as I had mentioned before, this is the women's museum.
Wait a
Kind
minute,
of
wait a
roots.
minute, wait a minute. There was a machine gun on the roof of a church. Church.
The flat of University Church. So,
Either, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
That seems oxymoronic.
Yeah, I mean, Civil War. Also, right? This is what I thought was really interesting. Ruth Talon, who she's an author, and she is speaking to James Conley's daughter Nora, and Nora describes the incident as an example of the relationship that existed between men and women in the Citizens Army. Quote, when they were going out to attack a nest of snipers, she was in charge of the squad.
You know, when we talked about Colin Gubbins, Colin Gubbins was here. And
So there
he
you
was
go.
watching all of this going like, yeah, we can't like discount the contributions of these women because they're kicking our ass.
Yeah, they're killing it. Oh, it's those uteruses, though.
Well, I mean, look, he was one of the reasons why the SOE had women. And it's because
And
of
he
this.
wasn't wrong, right?
Because
Like,
he's
he
watching
wasn't.
this.
I just, okay, I think this story resonated with me so much because we talk about a lot of really impactful, really powerful women, but like, for me, it's so interesting to see that they can come out of anywhere
Yeah.
and step up at any, like, it doesn't have to be like the commander's daughter or something like this was a school teacher from Scotland that thought to herself, do you know what? I have a skill set here and I can use it. And I'm going to fight for the freedom for these people because I agree. They're not wrong, right? Like, and I think it just speaks to the indomitable spirit of being a woman. Like, we can absolutely do the thing and we absolutely will do the thing and we will not be stopped. And I just love that for her as much as I love me a good pirate queen. So, she would actually take the worst of the injuries. She was shot several times and she laid in agony for 3 days while the fighting continued.
Oh,
Right?
bummer.
She never saw Commandant Mallon again. He was executed by the British, which in turn, along with Conley, who only proved to make the desires of the surviving troops want their freedom even more. In fact, Conley's court-martial, he wrote out in a statement, quote, the cause of Irish freedom is safe as long as Irishmen are ready to die endeavoring to win it. He was the last to be executed in that group of rebel leaders, but it only worked to inspire rebels more.
Yeah, it made a martyr.
It absolutely did. Like, we did not... The British did not think this through when they decided to, when they were able to capture, you know, a week later when they were able to capture the rebel leaders and the rebels, they took out the leaders and they didn't think about how, like, how you become a leader, what that does, what that means for the people that follow you.
Yeah.
Not thought out well. But anyway, Margaret spent 7 weeks in the hospital and was absolutely incredulous to find out that the leaders were executed. We had obeyed all the rules of war and surrendered as formally as any army had ever capitulated. So, having done everything they were told to do and believed they would be right, they not only made martyrs of their leadership, but they proved just how hypocritical they could be, right? Like,
Hypocritical?
yeah, hypocritical. What did I say? Hypocritical?
Yeah. And I was just
Yeah,
like
hypocritical.
apocryphal, like the last books of
No.
the Bible, the ones that were not included in Council of Nicaea.
No. No, not that one.
Okay.
Hypocritical. Words are so hard for me
Dude, you're
today.
fine. You're fine because I haven't gone yet, so you haven't gotten to correct me, but they're coming.
That's true. They'll be there.
Yeah.
No, you're killing it. So, additionally, like, don't assume that her wound stopped her because Miss Skinander, during the War for Independence, now we're talking the years between 1916 and 1923, she becomes an active member of the Cumanumban, and
Sure.
this is the women's auxiliary to the IRA. And in 1922, she was made paymaster general for the IRA. In December of 1916, so almost a year later, she sails for America and spends the years of 17 and 18 on a propaganda tour for the Women's Auxiliary Unit. And I didn't know that was a thing.
You about to say, what does that even look like?
I have no idea, and
You write some
I'm what
cartoons
I'm
in the paper.
imagining.
You talk crap at all the bars.
I don't think you're wrong. That's kind of what I'm imagining. And I'm also imagining, like, this is also the time for American suffragettes, right? So they're seeing this woman have this amazing story to tell about her time at during the Easter Rising and the wounds she took for it and the freedom they're fighting for. And I am quite certain this inspired some conversations at the very least on the American side of things.
Yeah.
Right? When she returns to Ireland, she trains volunteer recruits and was active through the War of Independence. She was imprisoned at one point in the Mountjoy Jail and in that's part of the North Dublin Union from 22 to 23. She receives no pension from the government because she was in fact a woman. So, like, her job didn't matter. None of the things that she
Her,
did, like, she
yeah,
didn't
her
have
boots got in the
an
way.
IRA. Yeah, I mean, of course they did. I love this part. In 23, she becomes a teacher in King's Inn Street, Dublin, and in 1949, she becomes an executive of the INTU. And the INTU is the Irish National Teachers Organization, which was founded in 1868. So it is the oldest and largest trade union in Ireland. And here she is remembered for her efforts in the fight for the rights of its women members. Like, this woman saw injustice, and this woman was out to stop injustice, however she could. In 56, she becomes the president of INTU and serves on the Irish Congress of Trade Unions in their executive council until 1963. Margaret Skinander died in October of 1971 and is buried in the Republican plot beside Countess Markovitz.
Aw,
And I love
it
that
came
for
full
her. I think
story
she's,
or full
didn't it?
circle.
Like, I, there's so, there's literally, I had so many questions and so, I have some amazing pictures. I just was so inspired by her story of just seeing what needed to be done and doing it, as opposed to just going back to Scotland and pretending it didn't exist.
Yeah.
And it made me wonder how many, because when I was looking into the other leadership of the rebels, a lot of them were from Scotland or had spent time in Scotland or were raised in Scotland and then came back to Ireland, or their parents were Irish and they came to Ireland, whatever. Like, So it left me with a lot of questions about how truly involved Scottish people were in this event, in that they don't get spoken about enough. Or was it just simply that we're kind of all the same people fighting for the same thing? It just the fight just happens to be in Ireland right now.
So what
I
do
don't
you
know, but
think
I
it
thought it was
is?
really interesting. I think it's a combination, honestly. I think that, Scotland's looking at the same situation that Ireland's looking at, maybe not such a powder keg, but they're seeing the treatment and the way that things are happening in Ireland. And Ireland is unique in that there's not just political unrest, there's religious unrest, there's social unrest. It's not just one thing, right? Like Ireland always seems to be a tinderbox of multiple problems at once. And I know that exists in other places, but especially in this time and in this century, that seems so real for Ireland. So I have a feeling that the people that were from Scotland being involved in this was just seeing what they saw and wanting to help in a place where they knew they could. That's my theory. I don't know how right I am about it. I'm really excited to learn a lot more than what I've already learned. This might be my new obsessive topic,
This might be
but
your
that
Rome.
this might be my new room. Yeah, I do have some pretty fabulous pictures, at least a couple pretty fabulous pictures.
Go on.
Do go on. Do you see these lovely women? I do not think any of
Oh.
them are Margaret, but these are the this is the women's auxiliary and part of Sen Fin.
It is a
So
black and white photo. There are four people in the foreground seated. They have boots that go mid-calf, but are probably also flat,
yeah.
hot, lots of laces. Those things took 5, 10 minutes to get on in the mornings.
Easy.
They're also wearing pea coats and they've got belts and sashes. They're in black, but the sashes and belts are in a lighter color, presumably a white. The people behind them have the same dress. They're all wearing fabulous hats. And yeah, they are a mixture of facial expressions. There are smiles, there are grimaces, there are
There
flat
are win a
affects.
snack.
Yeah.
Why am I here? Who brought me to this? I thought there'd be cake. Yeah, I absolutely love this picture. And then because I was curious, I needed some maps. In case you were curious like I was, here's a map of Ireland that shows the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland, wherein when they finally win their independence, Northern
Yeah.
Ireland is right. So I was curious where the line for that actually was, despite like we know we have the names of the counties, but like visually I needed to understand that.
Did you
And then I
ever
found
watch The Dairy Girls?
no, that's on my to-be watch list. Like super excited for that one.
It needs to be on there. Like you need to get on that because one of like the last the I won't call it the season finale, the series finale is about Ireland gaining its independence. And it is a
Okay, well,
very emotional episode.
I'll give it a go then. Yeah, so there's I thought this map made it'll make it a little bit more sense, at least visually for me. You can see England, Wales, and Scotland there, and where Northern Ireland sits compared to everywhere else. Yeah, that made way more sense when you think about how it worked.
I mean, facts.
It truly. That's the that's yeah, I have no other pictures. I thought I had one more, but I do not. So anyway, there's my Margaret Skinander. And if any of our listeners out there are literally pulling their ears out because I pronounced her name wrong, if you could kindly tell me phonetically how it's said, I'd appreciate it. Because mentally, I could say it every single time, despite the fact that I listened to it, I could not say it out loud.
Fair.
Fair.
Okay.
That's my girl.
I like her. She's new to me, which is fantastic. And I think I need
I
more
love
people who are new
new.
to me.
I love new to me.
All right. I'm going to tell you the story of the woman who founded Vancouver, Washington.
Okay.
And she is singular in founding Vancouver, Washington, which is fantastic. And I will fight anybody who says otherwise.
Meet her at the trash cans at 3 o'clock. You're going down.
Yeah. So I'm going to tell you the story of Esther Short. My sources, the Hudson's Bay Company's Fort Vancouver by the National Park Service. There is an article by Colin E. O'Connor. Esther Clark Short and her family settled near Fort Vancouver on December 25th, 1845. That is the title. Goodness grief. I did look up the Treaty of Oregon, and so I had to go to the Northwest Power and Conservation Council. I mean, when you're having to like dig up treaty language, you went deep.
Truly.
Pat Gelada wrote a bit of history, Esther Short, in Vancouver Family Magazine. Amos and Esther Short, one of the city's founders in Clark history from the Columbia. And then a dude named Gary Gilman wrote a rather long, like, history of Vancouver City Cemetery, like you do.
Okay.
So reference
Like you
that.
do.
Yeah. Okay. So most people don't know where it is, in fact, that I live. And I lie and say that I'm from Portland, but the truth is, I am from a suburb. I am just north of Portland in a small, like a town, I guess, that is just on the other side of the river. But I mean, we can throw
Okay.
rocks at Portland and sometimes do. What most people
Could
don't
you turn your music down?
would you please? Because
In fact,
I mean,
yeah.
there are things. Now, what most people don't realize about this neck of the woods is that the country itself became the US in 1776. We know this, or 1777 is when we actually established it, the whole nine, but we, kind of claimed it. But Vancouver, Washington was British and stayed British until 1846.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I mean, that
And
makes sense.
it's like we know that because, we talked about the Pig War and how the 49th parallel and all of that fun stuff. But it's just nuts to realize like Vancouver was British territory.
That is wild, actually. Like, yeah, I remember specifically thinking about the Pig War and relationship to like the American independence, but didn't like they don't exist.
You don't
Together.
extrapolate further, and you don't
Yeah,
realize
like,
like Britain owned two Vancouvers in the same time zone.
because you couldn't have just one. You have to have a matching pair.
Right. And
Earrings.
it's like, what do we, what? What? Yeah. Now, one of the, like, I absolutely adore my neck of the woods and I adore learning all about it. And we actually have a state park in Vancouver that is the Fort Vancouver. And so on the grounds of one of the old Fort Vancouver sites, because it moved, is a
I'm
recreation.
sorry. I just had this image of the fort picking up its skirts and walking away.
Yeah, it picks up its wooden fence skirt and
Yeah.
shimmies down the
I'm so
river.
sorry. There was no way I could have not said that. It was literally the
No,
visual in
I
my
mean,
mind, and I was trying to tell myself to shut up.
as soon as you said that, or before you even said that, I saw it. And then you said,
Oh,
okay,
good.
when you say, and I was like, oh, dang it. We have a mind meld.
See?
Yeah. So Vancouver, British until 1846. This is all 1800 stuff. I don't think I touched the 19. So if I say any other number, 1800s.
Got it.
So 1825, well before Esther Short and her family arrive here, the Hudson's Bay Company sets up and establishes the Fort Vancouver, which is right along the banks of the Columbia. Now, this area is so pivotal for the Hudson, the HBC, if you will, that they like it's hard for me to imagine living in a metropolitan suburb that this was renowned for wildlife. But it was. Because, I've got to think 150 years ago, kind of deal, 200 years ago.
Yeah.
And it is the focal point of all of these operations because the next couple of lines, if we talk about history, not existing in a vacuum, are going to be bananas. Because we're talking about the Hudson's Bay uses this as its focal point for operations that stretch from Russian controlled Alaska to Mexican owned Canada.
That's wild.
And then as far east as the Rocky Mountains. So all of those fur trading shenanigans converge in Vancouver. Now,
That's a conference.
isn't that like, it's weird for me to imagine Mexicans, Russians, and British people seated around a table piled in beaver pelt.
It's actually very easy to imagine it when you add the beaver pelt.
Okay, well,
At
here we go.
least for me, anyway. Before that, no, they were all
No.
wearing the suit of their nation.
Fair.
Sombreros were involved.
I agree. I agree to your terms. Now,
Thank
the
you.
craziness is that when you think of Vancouver, both Britain and the US lay claim to this city, even at this time.
This
In
checks.
an extreme claim, the British argue that everything north of about the California border is theirs. It goes Mexican-owned Canada, British territory. But most agree that everything north of the Columbia River is English territory. So keep Portland weird, keep Portland not British, and then everything north of that belongs to the king.
It all starting to make sense about why Portland is so weird.
Yeah, because we've maintained, we kept our solidarity. Now, kind of crazy that even though this was the Oregon Territory, if you will, there's not any American settlers yet. And the HBC desperately wants to maintain control of the fur trade. So they have a habit of harassing American settlers and forcing them to skedaddle, move on down the road.
As you do.
You don't have to go home, but you can't settle here. And here's where we have Esther Short and her family enter stage left. Esther Short, her ancestry is kind of ambiguous, right? There are some sources that are going to say that she's half German and half Algonquin Indian, and others claim that she's a quarter Cherokee, a quarter Algonquin, and half Six Nations. What we know is that this woman is a force. Like, there is really only one photo of her that exists, and I'm going to share that with you now so you can be like, oh, her. Okay. Like, everything about her said she will give you the backhand of justice.
That is a woman you do not say no to. Yes, ma'am, is what comes out of your mouth, and you hop to what it is she is asking. She is got your quintessential antebellum hair part with the in the hair on either side. She is wearing what looks to be like a dark silk taffeta style dress with the white collar, the high white collar. I love the sleeves.
I know.
Oh my goodness, the sleeves.
The
It
lace
looks like she's
sleeves.
got. Yeah, her lace sleeves look like doilies sewn into the sleeve, and they're absolutely gorgeous. And no, ma'am, she did not sew those doilies into those sleeves. Those are lace sleeves she made by hand, and I will go get you more lace, madam.
Right. And everything
Thank
about
you for
that
letting me
face says,
live.
I will not tell you twice.
That is the F round and find out face.
So she, regardless of her full ancestry, is at least part of First Nations. Like, she does hail from that stock. Now, she's gonna have to be strong because at some point she decides with her family to take a trip from Illinois to Vancouver. They may not understand that that's where they're headed ultimately, but they're going to Vancouver. They have six children. Now, think about this. She's one of like 50 something wagons. How long do you think a wagon trip takes from Chicago to Vancouver?
6 months.
Damn it. Did you see my notes?
I played Oregon Trail.
I just died of dysentery and never made it.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. So she's on this 6-month wagon trip, six kids and a husband. And to make matters just a little bit tougher, right outside of Boise, she gives birth to her son, Grant Hall Short.
Is this kid number 7?
Yeah.
Oh,
Yeah.
get it, mama.
Now, I mean, okay, I've been pregnant, you've been pregnant. The last month of me with six pillows on a queen-sized bed by myself because I didn't share well. I was deeply uncomfortable.
I
And
slept
I'm
on the couch.
because you were just like, I will not share my place, my space.
No, because I couldn't lay down.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, now imagine being on a bumpy wagon.
Wouldn't do it about. You can wait till this baby's born.
Right? You
Yeah.
guys go ahead, I'll catch up.
Yeah. Find me a nice hotel in Boise and call it good.
Yeah, I'm done tapping out. So I got to read that part where she gave birth and I was like, oh, it wasn't she was freshly pregnant and ended the Oregon Trail 6 months in. It
Could
was.
you imagine having a, like, okay, birth is uncomfortable and that last month is uncomfortable, but a newborn.
With your bit swollen.
Yeah, on a bumpity. Oh. That
No
poor
thanks.
baby.
We were
Oh.
talking about Esther and not the infant, right?
Yes, the
Yeah.
baby's
Okay.
fine.
The
I'm
baby will
talking about
live.
Esther.
Yeah. So meanwhile, all this is happening. They make it. They make it to the Pacific Northwest. And they get here and they decide they're going to, really kind of see what's going on. As all this is happening, June 1846, Great Britain and America signed the Treaty of Oregon. So that establishes the 49th parallel as the border between the two countries. And nothing bad ever happens because that treaty is very clearly defined and nobody ever gets upset about ambiguity. Definitely
I
not.
recall a specific fight over a fence line and a pig, but hey.
I mean, you say that, and I'm gonna say definitely don't listen to episode 3, which is about the pig war. Definitely don't. Because,
Because none of that actually happened. It's an alternate reality.
I
In
mean,
this
it's
reality,
awful. It
everybody's happy.
also includes the National Park Service. Okay, so this happens. They sign the treaty, and the newly gained land that is now Washington, Oregon, and Idaho, that's the Oregon Territory. And in hopes to get this land settled, Amos Short, Esther's husband, he receives 640 acres as part of the donation land claim, and he settles his family on the land west of Fort Vancouver.
Okay.
Now, this land stretches clear along the banks of the Columbia River, and they love this land because it's fairly level, it's not densely forested, and it lends itself perfectly for farming.
Okay.
Which, great. And then more auspiciously, Mexican-owned California is going through a gold rush.
Yes.
And the demand on the gold with the gold rush causes the demand for food. So the Shorts begin farming potatoes.
Okay.
And this sets them up to make a great living. And I didn't realize trade stretched that far. I thought local food for local markets, but they are growing potatoes for California. So it
So
was
you're
a
telling me there are wagon folds of potatoes coming down Oregon into California.
presumably they're more loaded onto a boat, so they would, I'm assuming, these are assumptions and my assumptions will be elaborated on further down the story. They load their potatoes into a wagon, they take that wagon to the Oregon coast, maybe near Astoria, load it onto a boat, take that boat down to California, and then take that boat all the way up.
That makes more sense.
Or they could end up taking their potatoes, putting them onto a boat, taking it down the river to the coast onto a bigger boat. Maybe that, I think that's more, I think that would probably be faster. I haven't Google mapped it yet. And I think
No, yeah.
you can choose for public transit, you can choose for walking, or you can choose for driving. I don't know if you could do boat versus horse, but I would be open to try that.
Yeah, I mean, there was a time where we could figure out how long it took to get from place to place in Westeros.
I love this for us. I didn't know that existed. So either way, they're growing potatoes. And as their prospects grew, so did their family. 10 kids. I don't
At
know if
least we're
you
stationary now,
were
right?
stationary, and I don't know if you could tell from the photo, but Esther was stout. She had birthing hips.
She mom had birth and hips. Yes, she did.
She could do it.
I'm going to assume 6 of those 10 kids were boys.
I have no idea. I didn't go through the family tree and count male, female, and know how many blue and pink blankets to send, but these are things. Now, as all this is going on, they actually become the first American settlers to establish in this area.
Okay.
Now, since they kind of hit this milestone, the residents of the fort, they feel some kind of way about it because again, they're in it for the beaver pelt. Now, this area was primarily male. It was founded by lumberjacks. So there was no, that's why we have so many strip clubs per capita, even to this day, Angie. I don't know why you're giggling like I said something deeply.
Thanks. You could just edit that.
Nope. Now the shorts, they may not have understood how the HBC hotly contested all of these treaties signed by multiple governments. They really believed that the Columbia River separated their countries and that that was it. Like, they don't need the Oregon Treaty to tell them otherwise. This is English land. That
I
might be a
mean, that
problem.
seems right.
Seems fairly British.
It really does.
And the HBC, they've already repelled many other Americans. These shorts are just going to be another in a line. Now, at first, they start by damaging the shorts' fences. And
Why is it always the
it
fences?
starts with the fences, right? It's a very colonizing playbook. You do the
It
fences,
really is.
the pig eats the potatoes.
And here we are.
And next thing you know, it's keep your potatoes out of my pig. Now,
And also, I'm calling Germany.
yeah, you always have to call Germany in this age. Now, that the fence damage doesn't, it's not enough to chase them off. The shorts are just very tenacious people. And since it didn't work, it kind of escalates a little bit because 1848, Amos Short leaves. He runs an errand, goes to town to get tobacco. I don't know. He's not present. He's not accounted for at this
Okay.
moment. And that's when the British, they decide to round up Esther and her children. They put them on a boat. And they rowed them to Hayden Island, where the target is. The target wasn't there
Oh, okay.
originally.
I'm so sorry. I totally had the image as soon as you said that. I was like, oh, thank God we made it to Target. And then my brain did not even like Target was not there. Macy's wasn't there yet. Like, we're still figuring this out.
You're not wrong. So they put him on Hayden Island, and then she's ordered to, quote, stay put. And they leave. Her and the kids. Just goodbye.
Yeah, because listen, I do what I want. That is the face of a woman that is not going to stay put if she does not want to stay put.
So somehow she makes it back home because you're right. She did not indeed stay put. Now, when the British worked that realized that didn't work, they try a variation.
It's
They
because they didn't really have a target there yet. I would have stayed put for the target.
right? You'd be like, you know what? There's a lot here. This place has a lot to offer, and it's all very reasonably priced.
There's a Starbucks inside.
Food, beverage, comfortable chairs. What more could who could want anything more?
Exactly.
So the British, they come back. This time Amos is there. And they took the entire family. They put him on a boat, they take the oars away, and they push the boat down the river. And they wave bye.
Wow.
Now, that could have killed him. Maybe it's killed others, but Columbia's pretty tame. Somehow the shorts return home. And again, the British return because ain't nobody's got chill. And this time, there's a dude who comes to the door of the cabin and he strikes Esther in the face with a club.
Oh, that feels like a bad idea.
Yeah. And this assault changes the entire family's feelings towards the residents of the fort. And it's after this point that Amos starts carrying a rifle around with him wherever he goes.
It's fair, so would I.
Yeah, I mean, now this lesser people would have died. I mean, a club to the face has killed many a person. Cast out into the water.
Yeah.
That's a missing persons episode. Now, April 1850, the British returned because apparently they're undeterred by their previous failures. And a Hudson's Bay officer,
That also checks for the British.
right? You know, look, we can't. We're just going to keep failing until we unfail.
They have not learned about the Han Dynasty yet.
No. So a dude named Dr. Gardner, who's an officer at the HBC, him and a servant, they go and they confront Amos Short, and they claim that the title to the Short's property is actually owned by Dr. Gardner, and they just need to get off his land, despite the fact that they've built houses, they've started farming, like it's clearly not his.
Right. Like if Gardner really owned it, he would have had a problem before they were
Yeah.
established.
Quite
Yeah.
possibly. Now, strangely, the Shorts refuse to leave. And Gardner refuses to
Weird.
leave. Now, this results in a shouting match. It results in threats volleying back and forth. And then it starts with gunshots. And somehow, in the presence of Amos's farmhands who are there, both of the British men die.
Didn't see that coming.
Oopsie poopsie, they're dead. Amos is arrested for their murder. Now, we do know that the judge is reported in saying, "The only trouble I find with you, Short, is that you didn't shoot more of them."
Okay.
So Amos is acquitted of all the charges and he's coming back home. Now, while he's in court fighting these charges, the HBC shows back up on the Short homestead. Because
I have
stupid's
a beef with
sticky.
them.
Stupid is
Yeah.
sticky, and you just can't wipe enough of it off, you know? There's a French Canadian lieutenant named Francis Faycette who he shows up with his men and he orders them to destroy all the fences again.
Because it
And
works so great the first time.
yeah, and Esther is absolutely over it. She is so fed up with this man, she slaps him. She
Good.
slaps him so hard, she knocks his ass to the ground.
Good.
This fiery action causes this dude to get up and be like, "This absolutely brave mother shall never be harassed again. We stand down. We will never return." They've clubbed her. They've destroyed her fences. They've tried killing her multiple times, and it just took one backhand of justice.
Which she is ready to deliver.
I mean, that face said she should have delivered it months ago. Now,
That you know there was a conversation, you know there was a conversation in bed between Amos and her where she was like, "You know what, honey, we just need to smack him back. That's how bullies operate. Once you hit him, they leave you alone." And
and
he
he's
kept
like,
trying to tell her
"I
to be
killed
polite.
two of them." And she's like, "No, slap him."
That's not how it works. You can't just kill them.
The
They have to
first
remember
time
what they've done.
you show them the front of your hand and you cup their cheek, albeit slightly, as you turn their head, and then you bring it back with the backhand. You get both cheeks. So, despite the HBC standing down, you would assume that this would be the end of it. Amos and Esther, they'd go back to having a happy life, raising potatoes, producing more children. Thus is
The
life.
things.
But it's in 1853 that Amos is returning home from a trip from California selling the family potatoes, that the ship, the Vandalia, sinks and his body is lost at sea.
Ugh.
Which I was really kind of upset about. And I
Yeah, I
had to
liked
remember
him.
that because I actually got to go recently to Esther Short's grave with Kiddo, and we actually broke into the cemetery. That's a different
Oh,
story. That was
that was the cemetery, sir.
that was the cemetery
That's awesome.
break-in. And I was like, oh, his grave's not next to hers. It's like, oh yeah, because body was unrecovered. So there was that. But with Amos dead, Esther learns that the land claim paperwork that Amos filed completely incorrect. It's all wrong. And so she has to go through and refile that paperwork. And then all of these fun patriarchal laws go into effect. As soon as the land is correctly filed, so she is indeed the owner and they're not going to, rifle it off to Dr. Gardner and his ilk, the land is cut in half. Half the land goes to Amos Short's children, which are her kids, and the other half she gets to keep for her own devices.
Okay, so that's fair.
I mean, it is, but now, I
Sort
mean, it's
of.
just like the wife has all of it and divvies it to the kids upon her death, as opposed to like, well, I just cut my fortunes in half. Here you go,
Well, I'm
kids.
wondering if it did she have by this point if her if she had older sons and that's why it worked.
Maybe.
I'm thinking that would have to be the case.
I didn't track her kids' ages at this time, but that would make sense. I don't even know the breakdown of gender, so I cannot be trusted. So with this,
I didn't get
she
any sources from Reddit this week. I just want you to know.
I'm never gonna let you live that down, so it doesn't matter.
Well, I just wanted you to be proud of me for a minute.
I am proud of you. Angie, I'm proud of
Thank
you.
you.
Okay. So now, I mean, because again, 640 acres, she gets half of that, so that's 320. So that's still a decent chunk of land. And with that, she keeps the eastern portion.
Okay.
And she ends up starting to sell lots of land to the new settlers that are coming to town. And as more settlers are arriving, it's still far from a metropolis, but it's a decent settlement and it starts firming up. So it's that same pioneering spirit that causes her to open her own restaurant, and she builds the Pacific House Hotel in 1854. Like, so she's
Oh.
getting it. She is establishing herself. And then to continue her badassery, a year later after establishing the hotel, she's the one who files the town plat for Vancouver in July on July 28th. So
That's so cool.
she was the first American resident, and she stayed there and built it up and then turned it into a town, like filed the paperwork. And that same year, she gives a strip of her land, which became the public plaza, the public wharf, and then there's a park that bears her name. And that park is where our farmers market's held. And right
That's so
across, like,
cool.
yeah. And it's just nuts to know that the land that Kiddo like grew up playing on the park, where my dog learned how to go down the slide, that was all owned by Esther Short, the badass woman
That
who
is,
slapped an HBC.
I love that. That is so cool. Do you have more? I love her.
I don't have more. As much as we know, we don't really know it. Like, it was hard to drum up those sources, like to drum up that amount of tale, right? But
Love her.
when you go to
Is
her,
there a statue?
there's a statue at the park, but it's not of her. It is of, let me see. It is of the pioneering mothers.
Oh, okay.
So allow me to share my screen. So you just see,
Okay.
presumably, like, I guess that could be her per se, but it just doesn't seem too much like her. And on the back, it just says to the pioneering mothers. And I know this statue very well because I mean, I lived across from that park for 8 years. We went there daily.
That's amazing. And I love that. So, okay, so the statue, it's definitely bronze, yeah. The statue features a standing woman who is surrounded by smaller children, like hiding in her skirts. She has this look on her face that says, I'm about done being at the park. I would like to go home and
Yeah,
have a
complete with
mimosa.
the long cardigan, you know, or it's just like, yeah, I'm over it.
Yep, she's probably got her hair in a bun.
Yep.
Yeah, I love that. It's a beautiful statue.
It is. And I've got so many pictures of kiddo as a toddler, like climbing up, holding on to one of the kids' arms, and just amazing. So, but it really kind of gave me pause to learn more about her and to realize how much land she controlled, how much she did, and to realize like there were potatoes there. They were farming
Yeah.
potatoes. Like,
I love that you just simply said, and then she filed the paperwork and there was a town.
and I mean,
Who do
like,
you file the paperwork with? I have questions.
I'm sure, like, a lot of paperwork is routed through Oregon City at the time. So you would have to drive your wagon all the way south past Portland to Oregon City to file all the things and then come all the way back. For whatever reason, they needed a town established, like officially. And she's the one who did the paperwork.
I think it's amazing. I love it. There are some undeterred spirits in our stories today, that's for sure.
Hell yeah. Some incredibly strong women who just, they don't have time for that.
No, we are doing the thing. Yeah. I love that. I need to see if my local history is really interesting, but I'm not sure if there's any one lady founder, you know, like we are the heart of the gold rush, so there's a lot of
Maybe they'll talk about potatoes from the Short family farmstead. Farmstead? Homestead? The Short family potatoes.
I will see what I can learn.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Because I didn't realize
that's
that
awesome.
up until saying this now that potatoes from my home to yours is literally what is happening in
Oh.
this podcast.
We send you our avocados in tribute.
We accept the avocados.
It
And if you,
seems like a good
that is a great trade-off, right?
Yeah. We get French fries, you get avocado toast. We're here for it.
Oh. I love all of this. I love all of this for us. And if you want to share how much you love this podcast or tell us we did a great job, do so with a review, preferably five
We love
stars.
that.
But I mean, you can keep your bad opinions to yourself because I don't need, I'm not subject to your thoughts. Those, but the good ones, I'll take the good ones. But the bad ones you can hoard like precious jewels to the EU that they are. And on that note, share us with your favorite avocado farmer and tell them how much you love this podcast. And on that note,
Bye.
goodbye.